Welcome to this week's Casterbris Podcast with a K, available on Casterbris, iTunes, Stitcher.com, and Audio Boo.
Hello to you, dear listener. I am Christian Corley. He is Brian Turnover. That guy over there is James McLean, and this is the podcast with a K. This week we're doing something a little bit different, but a little bit similar. We are going to be doing, I think it's next week, we're doing a Legopolis commentary. This week in the as Gareth wasn't available, and we were kind of scratching around for things to do to talk about Doctor Who, because you know pretty much nothing is going on at the moment in the Doctor Who universe. I won't say Hooniverse, apart from when I say I won't say Hooniverse. And when I say that, I won't say that I won't say Hooniverse. We thought, let's do a commentary on something that you probably aren't expecting. Now, this might kickstart a whole load of kind of sub-commentaries of Doctor Who that isn't Doctor Who, okay? So what we're starting off with is Dimensions in Time. Now, you may scoff. We certainly did. But we think it's worth looking at again, and we're going to be using a YouTube file, because as you probably know, it's not available on DVD, it hasn't even been released as an extra. So this is Doctor Who Dimensions in Time, as uploaded by Paul's Video Archive on YouTube. We'll have the link for it in the show notes. And this is it in its entirety, with the Children in Need and Noel's House Party stuff around it. So it give you a good flavour of how it was at the time when it was released. Are we all ready, chaps?
Yeah. Yep. Only thing could add, can one of us have it on a slight volume so it can be audible in the background, just little audible, so it gives people markers?
Yeah, well, I did that last time, I think.
Yeah, well, I'm just making sure you do it this. Right, okay.
Okay, so we're all ready, we're all synced. I'm hit play now.
Yeah!
Ah, no legend.
just having a little look there, Andy. Oh, just, my eyes go all
funny. As many times as I've seen this, I probably that's the first time I actually read what was on the newspaper.
Yes. I think I need to see the doctor.
This is before. Which is that? Is that the Yardley behind?
Yeah. Well.
Good question.
This I've is before he sort of became that sort of Satan before. Of online, sorry, of television gambling.
I am the doctor.
He does over here, Brian. He does. What's that show called?
No, I'm the
Christian.
The TARDIS.
Oh,
derivative
one with
the boxes.
And the
phone.
Yeah,
the box.
I've seen you in the year 2010.
They have a box with the value of money in, and then
you're still on television.
I can't.
Am I doing
Deal or No Deal?
Deal or No Deal? Yeah, it's a very satanic show.
I don't visit Fantasy Island.
Lures people making gambling choices with his wily, kind but wicked eye.
You're absolutely
and,
right.
Slightly
so he's a shyster.
I heard he was thick.
It's amazing. It's an amazing show. This is Oxford Fire.
We've been looking forward to seeing you in your new adventure, Dimensions in Time.
And is a radio presenter cum TV personality who through the 80s and 90s used to run a lot of variety television shows in the sort of Saturday evenings around the time Doctor Who should have been on.
Going by this, go on.
I was going to say, and you'd have guests on this sort of variety platform performance, which in this one was the hilarious joke of the manor hall called Crinkly Bottom, which you could just get like 8 years of material out of. Sad.
In fairness, well, there was a period it was so well written that it was a really good show for about 3 years, but it did last about 8 years.
Yeah, well, I'll disagree with that, but there we go.
Okay. Oh, look, plasticine heads of the first two doctors.
Just Ronnie, the time Absolutely.
And that guy. Why is that guy familiar?
That's Sam West, son of Timothy West and Prunella Scales, the latter you'll recognise from Fawlty Towers.
Okay.
He's in a lot of stuff these days, actually. He's turning up in a lot of character roles, Sam West. He's a good actor, actually.
So what do we say about, first of all, a quick word on that TARDIS? I mean, the very avant-garde use of a roofing ceiling that doesn't exist. Do we assume that other TARDISes have that?
Possibly. possibly.
Good question. I was more concentrating on that painted floor.
Yes, the painted floor is interesting. This is an
urgent message. Here we go.
It's John Coulshaw. It's vitally important that you listen carefully
to me for once. Of course, got to remind people this was in 3D, so these objects which are being thrust into your fascias is meant to sort of be thrust.
And this was the polarized type of 3D, wasn't it, rather than the red and blue.
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah.
Yeah, and obviously those two guys are dead, so rather than using any photo images, just get a couple of mannequin heads which don't really look like either of them, whoever they're meant to be. Do you guys consider this canon? Because I do, partially because I have a resistance to fandom and I know what really irks them. But in part, as I recall, he did push for a production code for this, didn't he? Because Nathan Turner wanted it to be part.
Cyberman. Yeah, as far as I understand, he wanted it to be real. I actually don't see an issue with it being canon. I know it's not the most well-written story, but I like it. I think the only strange aspect of it for me, I can get behind the Doctor kind of like flittering back and forth between his regenerations, but I don't understand why the companions do.
Yeah.
And I mean, I can think of reasons why, so it's not really the biggest deal in the world. But I do enjoy this.
I like that now. At the time, I used to hate it when I first watched it, but now after sort of you have the wave of new writers with the new adventures and Big Finish, where this sort of thing doesn't seem so out of place, the idea that you could sort of pull the notion of a companion in itself has its own sort of time stream, especially if you localise it to the TARDIS and the TARDIS becomes the nexus point. Then the Doctor and the companion is literally the same thing within its time stream. It just changes person.
Right, so I like that location, like the fact that they made it be one location and they had like a set time frame that it kept flipping between, because that makes it feel like a real Doctor Who story rather than just like
you
randomly going all over the place.
You two are far more charitable about this aspect of it than I am, to be honest with you.
Well, I think it works in that aspect. I'm less charitable about that.
I think stuff like this works. Location shooting's really good in a way that it probably wasn't for much of the 80s. Where'd all these people come from?
And where are we? I mean, there's a version of this out there on the internet where they've cut out a lot of the EastEnders bits. And that itself actually makes it a lot better when you've not got that celebrity angle to it.
You know, it's funny, too, because being American, you know, I know of EastEnders. I've seen EastEnders over the years and so on. But watching this, it never really felt like I was watching Doctor Who take place in EastEnders. To me, these were just characters. You know, so I get for England it's extremely different, but for America, this is just another story. You know, like the setting doesn't make any. It's not like you're setting it in Blake 7 or something where people are going to be like, or Star Trek, where you're absolutely going to know what it is. You know,
of course, Bonnie Langford now is a character in EastEnders.
Is she really?
She's got a role in EastEnders.
I think it's kind
of funny seeing this one. I forget her name, but I know her from Are You Being Served?
Yes.
She was born in Middlesbrough, same as me.
Hey, there you go.
Because this is goes to 2015, isn't it?
Yeah, I think
2015.
So.
20,
she was dead, second in from the left. It turns out that her death was actually fate, and she returned in 2015.
What year is this?
2013.
Oh, that's right, because everything was connected, I think, to like Kennedy.
Have you guys seen the Pertwee thing with the caption, "Madam, what year is this?"
Yes.
It's very unkind, but it is very funny as well.
It is. I'll tell you what. It is very unkind, but it is one of the most memorable moments of this short story for me. It really is.
I've never seen this before, but if you actually if you watch this, go back, pause this, go back. But those two extras actually look really frustrated. They can't get past Colin Baker and Carol Ann Ford. They're trying to barge past them, and they can't get past. That is really classic. Inrush of time zones is designed to seal us all. But I still think the production value is obviously a major issue, but it's a wonderful little celebration of all these characters, and you're getting them to cross-reference, which is fun as well. You know, Colin Baker is Sophie Aldridge. You know, that's something you never see. And obviously, you get the only visual appearance of Colin Baker with the Brigadier, which...
Yeah, exactly. Expert in time distortion. And it's a good one, too. It works.
I just want to know what Sarah Jane was thinking the morning she got up and put that on.
Right, she was feeling nostalgic. Do you remember that time I almost killed everybody? Oh, let me put that back on.
Well, I mean, to me, it's you can argue this with the mixture of what Stephen Moffat always put in his Time Crash of the sort of time displacements, and then mix that in with the fact that these are vestiges of the Doctor and the Companion from the TARDIS's time stream. So you can have that would be from her from the Hand of Fear being pulled through. And,
her hair just got shorter and she gained a hat.
Yeah, well,
yeah, I get what you're saying.
Looks really good in this, actually, doesn't he?
He does.
I mean, this is where it fails, is where you've obviously got a lot of extras in costumes, slowly lumbering. I think it's the weaker element. Like, yeah. That. And the shot coming up, they're all in windows.
But I like this aspect though. This one here, where the EastEnders characters can't see what's going on. I know it's cheesy, like that it's fans and costumes. But I like that aspect of it, that there's this danger that it's something that's actually missing quite a lot from the new series, where everybody knows what's going on in the new series. Yeah. But here you have this entire town that just has no clue.
In this story, it's a shame as well, because Pat Butcher would have been a quite useful ally against Davies, because she's a bit of a bruiser. 20 years back
and 3 miles away. I was just thinking you meant that you could tie her to the front of Bessie and just ram.
Exactly. Yeah. Sonic Screwdriver should help her.
I mean, the upside of this is that it's short.
Yeah, but he gave that up.
It's short. It has a couple of good moments in it, and it's not Time in the Rani.
Well, there is. Yes. It does have that in its favour. I'm still trying to work out why there's a guy from the Leisure Hive in there, though.
Well, yes, there's a. That's where it sort of lets.
Well, one of them was not a nice guy.
So we're back to with Noel Edmonds and the great John Pertwee.
Very good indeed. It is to be continued tomorrow night.
Yes,
6:45
to be continued.
On my house party.
He's a very smooth presenter. You've got to give Noel Edmonds that, which is why he's so smooth on Deal or No Deal, where he tricks poor people into giving up £32,000 or chance of being 28. Yes, and ending up 50p. He's a very, very smooth.
You know the best thing about Deal or No Deal is Harry Hill's TV burp. Look at some Harry Hill's TV burp on YouTube. And often he does a little phone gag because the banker call, rings Noel Edmonds in to make Deal or No Deal.
Oh, yeah.
So Harry Hill will work a gag into that, like he's at the end of the phone. So often works quite
Guys,
well.
You're missing the big thing here, though. Do we want Mandy or Big Ron to save the day here?
Oh, Big Ron.
You know, we have to vote in between these episodes.
Big Ron was a bit of a celebrity because he never said anything hardly ever in EastEnders until he had to die from a heart attack.
Children in need in
like a silent
people to phone us and pledge money and determine what would happen.
I love how you actually said that, though. He never said anything until he died of a heart attack.
Yeah.
It's like, and then he was very vocal after that.
He probably had 3 words a year or something. But Mandy's off here, Mandy.
Oh, man. See, now I'm going to see Big Ron after that build-up he gave me.
So we're talking about 40,000 people voted there.
Everybody here in the great house, kindly put on your glasses. There we go. Lovely. So Mandy will be helping the doctor.
And now leave the room.
The benefit of you who missed part one.
That's a shirt right there.
This is part two. And the evil Rani has cut the five doctors in a time loop.
Oh, it's camouflage for his studio, apparently.
I mean, I think what is interesting is that this does show quite Doctor Who's sort of mantelpiece pop culture position by this point in the 90s, where there is no real conviction of it as a drama. This is sort of played as if you were doing a pantomime of, you know, Dick Whittington, which of course is the nature of Noel's show, to be fair. But I do feel that this was really where it sat. This terrible drum bass theme tune is, you know, sort of.
Yeah, but it needed to be quick in order to make this short, as short as it needed to be.
Who's David?
I like this,
Rhoda,
though.
Anyway, do you relate to Rhoda? And
yeah,
Time Lord as well.
Yeah, she's awkward.
Yeah, but both Time Lords and the
yeah,
Time Lords have been bad, and the one character from the Leisure Hive, he was a bad guy at least. So you know, it kind of worked.
Take back what I said about an ingenious operator being behind these time jumps.
What's going on?
I mean, this is just
burn.
This is what I like about this as well, is that it is a very sort of new wave sort of deconstruction idea that, say, comes out with the books that you wouldn't have at this point, which made it very
it didn't really fit very well. But like, for instance, Peter Davison's Doctor had never met the Rani, but he's not really Peter Davison's Doctor. He's still McCoy in a different body, which, again, as I say, is very much what they played with in books and audio.
Yeah.
Didn't on television. So in a lot of ways, this is actually quite groundbreaking.
But at the same time, though, Davison's Doctor may have not met her in his era, but he's known of her, because the first time we see the Rani, it's not like the Doctor didn't know who she was. You know, he knew her from Gallifrey.
Then Colin Baker is not shocked by Ace, is he?
This was... Yeah, well, true. This was something... So that's a very good point. But this was something, when I first saw Dimensions in Time, I had no clue who this guy was, because by the time I had seen this, I hadn't made my way through all the Pertwees yet. And so I had no idea. But even after I tried watching it again, he had changed so much for me. And I had remembered Mike wasn't a unit officer anymore, that I kept trying to figure out who this guy was. But now he's like, I'm so used to it. He's so familiar.
Yeah, this is the stuff I like about it. All these locations.
Yes.
Yeah. Good camera work, too. It's nice. And of course, like James said earlier, this scene is worth it alone. The Brig and Six.
Yeah, but it's not Six, is it? As we've already established, it's the Seventh Doctor.
Well, true, but it's that visual aspect, you know. Prepare to
rematerialize at the center of the Earth-time meridian. I like the
How do you think that works for the companions then? Because at one point, we're going to see Romana comes into the picture, and she remembers which human she was, or rather, Leela remembers that she was Romana. So, like, the companion... So Ace is changing, too? So are we supposed to assume that all these companions, even split companions, when we saw Perry and Nyssa, they're all supposed to be Ace?
I think you've got to see it as like a temporal fusion, where it is Ace's position. Ace is moving through all this. But the actual... Not just the physicality, but the is that person from a different point in time stream placed... on top of Ace, so you've got the mixture of the two, and I think that works.
You got the mixture, okay. I can get behind that. Never
dragged in. Yeah, I remember that the re-edit this that someone did not move that Mike Reed scene, like which I think was well-choosed.
Perfect Victoria here, too. My God, like, out of all the characters, they tried to, like, fit their age and style. They made her look like Victoria's mother instead of Victoria. Like, I mean, look at this outfit, you know? Moments like that with dubbed over lines that they forgot. They do that twice with Sylvester.
I have to say, as much as I love Sylvester, he's not on par in it. He's not on form. He seems to be struggling a bit. For the Greenwich
Meridian. Well, this was all such short notice.
With genetic codes and brain prints of every living creature in the entire cosmos. With it, I like this line, though. To control, except it covers over. What form were you in? Shows how much I've seen. When she cloned you, I think it's very important. Wish we've got to not stop talking. We obviously were so pulled into this moment. With Rani's computer. Again,
we're waiting for your line. Here we go. This is the other dubbed one. See that? You can even see his face. His mouth isn't even moving. But it's necessary. K9.
Harness the power of the time tunnel. Yes. Again, as I say, it's a great little crappy celebration. I mean, I suppose after we'd had the five Doctors and three Doctors, this couldn't compare. Oh, look, it's her stereo.
Well, I'll put it to you this way. If this was, like, part of a season as an anniversary special, it wouldn't be so great. But as a charity special that they threw together rather quickly, they didn't send it up to me. You know, they tried to do a proper story with, like, the few minutes that they had to do it. So that's why I think it's worth it. That's why I think it works and is acceptable, because they treated it well.
And like I've said before in a previous podcast, you can take the Tom Baker bit as being the curator. Talking to his past self. Which gives it a nice little extra level to it. But
you're leaving her stereo. Come on, man. Her boom box.
Yes. Well, maybe they're actually... I mean, to be fair to them...
Great prop.
Be quite pedestrian. They're taking that stuff in first, and then she's having to come back and pull the rest of it off.
Could be. But poor Sylvester's... I mean, poor Ace is being made to do all the work.
I know. It's very weird, that, isn't it? And that's a lot. It's a lot shorter than I remember. Oh, there's a time crash now, that's BBC as well. So we could actually watch that, given it's...
Well, let me just stop what's coming up next on mine, which is rare unseen footage, which I've seen before, but I don't want to see right now.
Mine was time crash.
Was it? It was interesting that we got different recommendations.
I have the same rare unfootage. I don't have... I mean, I have a whole bunch that I can choose from on the screen, but my if my autoplay was on, it would have been the rare unseen footage.
That is strange. Okay, so, I mean, I haven't seen that all the way through. That, you know, I've probably seen it twice. Today's the third time. So I've seen it once when it happened, and I've seen it two or three years ago, and I've seen it again today. And I think... Personally speaking, it's more enjoyable when you're watching it with someone.
Yes.
I can see that.
I'm still finding that the bits with Noel Edmonds and John Pertwee are more entertaining than the majority of what follows.
Have you got my spares?
Your spares? What spares? Everything is in your blue box. Everything is in your blue box.
Whoa, he's got a blue box?
Okay.
Is your kid the doctor?
Go on, off you go and straight back downstairs with it. Okay? Be careful with it and don't drop it.
Lego.
He's developing a Lego habit. Which isn't a bad
thing. It all goes downhill from there.
Yeah, he's got a blue Lego box. So, sorry, go back to what were we saying?
I think that it was better talking. To watch with a friend.
Yeah, it was better to watch with a friend, and I found most of the vast majority of what followed the Pertwee and Noel Edmonds bit, I found the Pertwee and Noel Edmonds bit far more entertaining.
I don't know. I still like it. I like it. Yeah. I hated it when it first came out, and then I watched it a few years ago and didn't like it much. Then I watched it again more recently, and maybe purely because my hatred for Who fandom has increased. I don't know. Maybe, but whatever reason, I actually got more out of it. And to be serious, I still think it is that I suddenly recognized themes which at the time I considered didn't work, and now having seen them deployed in books and film and audios more,
such as what
I sort of got something. Well, like I said, I mean, I struggled initially with this whole idea that you've got this the Doctor shifting into these slightly older versions of the Doctor's past selves, but it isn't actually them because he's got the knowledge of McCoy, and then the same obviously happening even more crazily and less logically with the companions. And at the time I found that really hard to digest. But as I say, after you see this sort of thing played out, especially as the book started to play a lot more with these sort of ideas of continuity and how people fit together and notions of templates and mapping and all these sort of science fiction processes, this doesn't seem so crazy anymore. It seems to sort of kind of fit depending on how you look at it, if that sort of makes sense. And I was trying to think, there was something I was either reading or listening to which has done some, or something in Doctor Who's done something similar to this. And I'm trying to think what it is, where it's mapped things like this, and it's more believable than it was back in 1993, I think.
Well, you know, for me, I have to say I always loved it. And when I say loved it, I mean I just enjoyed it for what it was. Like, you know, like I said, if it was part of a real season, I don't think it would be as dynamic of a story as you know, I want to wish that it is. But I always liked it, and unlike you guys, I've probably watched this too many times. I don't know what it was. Maybe it was part of the fact that when I refound Doctor Who again, kind of in the 90s, that this was part of it. But I just, I'm a sucker for multi-Doctor stories, and I love time-bending stories. So those aspects that James is saying that he loves now, I'm totally with him in that, and the fact that the Doctor is kind of, you know, fluctuating between his regenerations but still retaining his memory of Sylvester. And now that new perspective on why the companions are doing it too, I really like it. I think it's a cool idea.
Well, it's like you get a lot of the audios. I mean, I say a lot of the audios, but I'm thinking back things like Zagreus, where you'll have sort of elements of the TARDIS or the Doctor mapped into a non-real space, which are part of the current of contemporary of the continuity, but not historical versions of. And it's sort of that sort of thing again is what you're having here. These are versions of the Doctor, you could almost sort of say parts of his psyche which are current, but are the original, are those regenerations that are now mapped into this continuity. So there's, it actually becomes quite, when you start looking at that, even though it's a superficial, silly thing, and that's all it was intending to be on a large part, certainly for the BBC, there are ways of finding new ways to look at it and making it interesting. Because I'd far rather have a multi-doctor story that I can get something out of than one that I just have to sneer at. And there seems to be a lot of resistance to actually even sort of saying, well, could this be part of continuity? And I say, well, I don't see why not. I mean, what the Rani's doing is simplified for 15 minutes, but it sort of sits with what she sort of does. She likes to catalogue. She likes to collect. She's using a TARDIS to do that, which, again, for a Time Lady, sort of makes sense. And from that point of view, you can therefore extrapolate this whole plot line fairly easily. As soon as you've got one of those powerful vehicles in the galaxy or universe or in time and space.
Actually, you know what you've just described there? You've actually described a Doctor Who fan who likes to catalogue and collect, pretend that they don't like the Doctor, and desires the ability of time travel. So perhaps actually Missy is the Rani. Extrapolating that further. Listen, I wonder, what do you think of the companions? Forget about the Doctor and the Doctor characters being active. What do you think of the companions that they chose and how they performed? Because I think Louise Jameson, who's another one who later ended up with a role in EastEnders, I thought she was terrible. She just was nothing like Leela at all.
Go on.
She wasn't really given space. Wasn't that much
space.
No,
but I mean, even the way she was, even like the breathless delivery and the delivery itself, there was nothing about Leela in that. It was just a girl in a silly, skimpy dress. It was nothing like a Leela performance. It was nothing like Leela that we see in, you know, everything up to Invasion of Time.
I think what we have to remember, though, is that a lot of these things, like, remember Jamie was supposed to be in it, Fraser Hines, and he was agreeable to it, and he was going to do it, and then last minute he had to back out of it. So whatever lines he would have said would have been given to another companion that could have made it. And we also have to remember, if I'm not mistaken, that Peter Davison was kind of a last minute yes to this. And so I think more so anybody who's not quite acting like themselves is because this wasn't exactly a time period or a job where they were given a script and said, here are your lines. Learn them, meet us here in a week, 2 weeks, whatever. It was, hey, can you be here tomorrow? Show up, we'll fit you for a costume, and here's your lines.
So, are we therefore saying that the difference here is that, I mean, if you compare this to Lala Ward, who basically, whenever she opens her mouth, she just sounds like Romana. Is Lala Ward not actually acting most of the time? Is she just being Lala Ward?
Well, there is, I think, the devil's advocate is that if you don't have... I don't want to say a good actor, because I think that's extremely, again, derivative. I think there is an assertion that an actor, what the actor brings to the role, if you take, they should be able to translate any script into the character that they're given. You could argue, therefore, that Louise Jameson was out of sync with this, or just had a bad day, or just didn't really have time, or was in the space to capture who Leela was, to translate that into the words. The body language, as you say, because for you, Christian, you're saying the body language felt off as much as anything else. Yeah. So maybe you could argue that she wanted to try and update Leela, or to give this an opportunity to sort of mollify her in different ways. I don't know. Maybe what she was trying to do. It's intentional.
A slight argument to that is that Louise Jameson with Big Finish had a big say in her lines in the scripts, because certain things that they were writing. And I think maybe this was partially due to the fact that they wanted to do stories with Sarah Jane Smith. And when Liz Sladen passed away, they kind of reworked scripts with Leela instead. And when she read those scripts, she found that the dialogue just was too, I don't want to say intelligent, because that's a horrible way to put it, but it was just words that Leela wouldn't say. It was too Sarah Jane, for sure.
Did you find and replace and swap Sarah Jane for Leela?
Right, exactly. And so she would then rework her lines or talk to them and say, we need to rework this because this isn't how Leela speaks. So she knows Leela's voice. And like I said, I think it kind of does kind of go back down to what I was saying, that, you know, everything was so last minute. You know, you just kind of do what's on the page because you don't have time to learn it. You don't have time to change it. Whereas with Big Finish, she has time to sit and talk with people and say, hey, you know, this isn't the character. You've got this wrong.
But hey, direction, though, the direction is really good.
Yeah,
throughout the camera work aspect of the direction.
It was a lot of good camera work. Yeah, absolutely.
I think also the other reason it probably fits better now is that obviously television pace has changed, and this is obviously, for the nature of its format, has to be fast paced.
Well, certainly series 25 and 26,
They were. I mean, there were elements
watchable these days. Whereas, I mean, I used to watch it. You know, when I first got my Remembrance of the Daleks DVD, which came VHS, big fan, which came in a box set with I think it's the first Dalek story in a tin, and I felt it was a bit cartoony, a bit comic book. It was very fast between scenes and stuff. And of course, you know, that's exactly the direction television was moving. And watching it now, it looks absolutely fine.
If not a little slow on occasion.
Yeah, I was going to say that. It might be a bit too slow nowadays. But yeah, yeah.
But yeah, I think once again, so in a sense, you could say that while... I think because the effects weren't very good at the time, you can't say, well, the effects have got worse with age because they were bad in the first place. So, you know, the actual aesthetic sort of doesn't really shift, but the actual pacing, as you say, and maybe the science fiction ideas now carry more grounding than they did then. So in some ways, time actually benefits it. I mean, it's not... No one here is saying it's brilliant television or it's brilliant science fiction or brilliant Doctor Who, but I think it sort of ends up being decanonized out of the EastEnders, almost. I think there's a sort of a rebuke to this thing, which I can say other Doctor Who stories, which I find far more boring than watching that, or cruddy, I think. Not trying to think about this, but I'd probably throw Time the Rani out there just because I'm like that. But I don't think it's that bad. I think and as Brian says, as a watcher, there's a lot of interesting things. So as soon as you put other characters in there from the past and other regenerations, you've got something which automatically engages the audience to start thinking than if it was just a pedestrian run-of-the-mill thing. You're thinking, this is weird. She was with him and he was once with her. Did they meet? That's so-and-so. I wish they'd met together. So you automatically got these sort of dialogues in your, you know, you're interacting with it in different ways. So it keeps you interested. So yeah, I think it's much maligned. It's not as terrible as people like to think it is.
So, dear listener, if you enjoyed Time of the Rani, beg your pardon, if you...
Of course you did. That's a statement I never thought you'd ever make.
If you did, however, enjoy Dimensions in Time and you watched it along with us earlier, which we hope you did, by all means, let us know what you thought. Tweet us or drop us a line on the Facebook page or even record a rebuttal or a response or any form of reply on Audio Boom, which is something you can just do by pressing record on your phone or your tablet or your PC whilst viewing the Audio Boom stream of the podcast with a K. And tell us what you think. We'll be back next week with another commentary of a slightly more classic Doctor Who story. Until then, it's goodbye. Right, James, are you recording?
Must I?
Just in case, please, yes.
You see, I like having music on in the background, which I can't have when I'm recording, and it's the same
anyway,
Luke song.
You're watching the telly.
I'm not watching telly. I don't have telly up here to watch.
Well, we're watching Dimensions in Time, aren't we?
Well, that's the netty, isn't it? I guess not the telly. I wasn't actually being pedantic. I was actually genuinely, anyway. What are we doing? Oh, recording. Do you have a URL for this? Because I've not looked for one.
I've just typed Dimensions in Time into YouTube, and I thought we could all select the same one, basically.
God, the amount of porn you'll get with
there's
that.
There's a good
title.
Idea.
So there's the first one, Paul's Video Archive, which is 17 minutes long. There's also one called by Fedokos Mokrator, which is 12 minutes long. I'm not familiar enough with Dimensions in Time to know which is the right one.
Do everything myself. Type in the URL. Dimensions in fucking time. Okay.
That will bring it up.
Oh, so that's what it brings up. The second one is obviously an edit, the 12-minute one. Oh, yeah, but the one after that is 12:18 as well. So why is part one? Let's have a quick run through part one. You can use the little bar at the bottom if you want to speed through things on YouTube.
Okay, wait, hold on.
Yeah, but I'm not familiar enough with Dimensions in Time to know what I'm watching anyway.
Right, I think the second one, well, I'm only doing this purely by the skills of observations that God and my mother gave me, but I think the second one, the first one has the little bits of Noel Edmonds included.
Right. Are we going to?
Which is why it's a little bit longer.
Are we going to restore Noel Edmonds?
Well, we might as well, might we? Because we get the John Pertwee at the beginning, which is what I think.
Okay, so we're going to go for the full Dimensions in Time experience as it was when it was watched.
Yeah. Without the 3D glasses.
Yeah, sadly.
Yeah, the one I have it on my computer as files, video files, of course. One of them is like 7 minutes long. That's the part two episode, and that has the Noel Edmonds section. And the first one is 10 minutes long, also with Noel Edmonds. So,
okay, so that makes
what did I just say? That we're looking for a 17 one.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. That so we'll go for the first one. Okay.
Right. So that's Paul's video archive. I've got. Is that not
Paul's
the one you've
video
got?
Archive? Yeah, that's what I see as
Paul's
well.
Paul's
yeah.
video archive. Okay.
You got that, Brian?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. So I've quit.
It's Paul McGann's video archive. It's where he based his character from.
Yeah.
just having a little look there.
Forgot to synchronize the play here.
Right, I'm 9 seconds through, and then I've just paused it.
Why have you done that?
Why don't you just rewind back to zero?
Okay, I'll do that then.
There we go.
So bloody difficult.
Okay, let me do an intro.
Right.
It's the podcast with a K. I'm Christian Crawley. I'm joined by what happened there?
Hey, at least you got the podcast name right.
Yeah. Hey, welcome to the Casterbris podcast with a not Casterbris. Good.
Nice one.
Hello to you, dear listener. Hello. Thank you, Brian. Thank you.